This hour of the Jason Rant Show is brought to you by MMComfortSystems.com. Lots of news happening all around the world and right here at home. So let's find out what's trending.
What's trending? The coronavirus.
I talked about this yesterday, and I told you it was happening. I told you that the framing of the increase, the surge of Delta variant cases, will lead to a whole bunch of people wanting to get tested. That is inevitably going to be the next push, and there will be people who try to take advantage of this and make money off of this. Now, generally speaking, I don't necessarily mind an investor or someone who sees the writing on the wall and wants to fill a market void. We saw this with masks. What happened when everyone started to say you need to wear a mask all of a sudden? I mean, after the several weeks of public health officials saying that masks don't actually do anything, a whole bunch of businesses came up and they started to do what? First, they said, you know, we're going to give you some of these masks. We're only going to charge like $3 for it. We're a clothing company that wants to step up and do something. We have all of this extra material that we can use, and we want to do our part. Well, that quickly turned into what? Designer masks, right? Masks that are stylish because there was a need. There was a desire. People purchased them like crazy, the reusable ones. And I'm assuming, I'm willing to bet, and maybe you can look this up, is there like a Dior version, some sort of like $20,000 mask, a luxury mask that is available on the market? I'm willing to bet someone stepped up and did that. Now, for the most part, I don't mind that. I find it kind of silly. I saw some of the companies, one was local, I think it was based in West Seattle, just putting someone's face on the actual mask, thinking that it was going to fool people, but really it was just creepy. That's what folks do. You're going to start to see that with the testing. And I just want people to be aware of that.
Gucci and Louis Vuitton came out with masks.
How much was the Gucci one?
Let me see. I just saw that Billie Eilish was seen wearing the Gucci face mask.
Of course. It was probably designed for her. Billie Eilish, a singer who has no personality.
Versace made one for $200. A Louis Vuitton, $550.
I hate them, but everybody else I'm all good with. So right now you're going to get pushed into testing. And it's not all your fault. Because the way that this is being framed is everyone is getting nervous, right? We're hearing the cases that are considered breakthrough cases in that you've already been vaccinated and people are getting still COVID. Now, the good news in all of that is that according to the data, if you were to get COVID while vaccinated, some people have, I mean, talk about asymptomatic. Some people don't even realize they have it. Others like, I got a sore throat, a little, I guess, a runny nose. And that's pretty much it. You're not landing in the hospital and you're not dying as a result. When we talk about the Delta virus or the variant, excuse me, we should at least acknowledge that it is not deadlier than any other variant that we've seen or just COVID as we originally knew it. Go ahead and look at the data nationwide, statewide. Yes, cases are up. That is true. Hospitalizations are down. Deaths down. We are nowhere near this next wave of cases. If we consider what we just saw as a wave, then we would have already hit its peak. As far as the stuff that is most concerning. But what's happening right now? What season are we in?
Summer.
Well, yeah, okay. But in the context of health. Say flu and cold season.
Flu and cold season.
Exactly.
Jason.
What happens during flu and cold season?
People get the flu and they get colds.
But what happened last flu and cold season?
Everybody was quarantining indoors.
Didn't get it
masks,
at all.
You know, that whole thing.
Wearing masks. What are they not doing now?
Wearing masks.
So what is likely to happen to individuals?
They're going to get sick.
They might get flu-like symptoms or a cold. Maybe they'll get flu. And it's not just flu-like symptoms. What symptoms kind of mirror what COVID symptoms are?
The flu.
And so people are rushing to get tested. Dr. Avanika Waring from Kaiser Permanente of Washington talked to Cairo 7 TV.
We are seeing an increase in symptomatic testing requests by about 50% at our institution at Kaiser Permanente, because I think we are definitely, you know, seeing more with the Delta variant.
Be aware of the people who will start to try to sell you tests. There is going to be a rush to market. Now, the good news is you've got the FDA there who can offer emergency use authorization versus what we saw with the masks, which was anyone could just come up with a mask and sell it. So there's a little bit of padding there of support. But with Bill Gates and George Soros purchasing a at-home testing kit company based in the UK, something tells me folks are going to continue to invest in this technology rather quickly and put it out there and try to get you to purchase. The vast majority of people do not need to get a test. Obviously, if you have symptoms and you think it could be COVID, talk to your doctor and let them decide. But the vast majority of people do not actually have to get a test. But I know how people work. I know how I work generally because I'm a hypochondriac. I always go on WebMD and I say, WebMD, tell me, why do I have a cough? And it says, you probably have brain cancer. I'm like, but I just have a cough. WebMD tells me, brain cancer. But don't worry, it might not be brain cancer. I'm like, phew, it could be AIDS. What? What?
Sorry, Jason, that's how it works.
I just had a cough. That's all. It lasted 3 days, and I'm actually feeling kind of fine now. That's how it works. People get in their own head. And if you are getting bombarded with messaging about the rise of the Delta variant, people are going to assume that they need to get the test. Talk to your doctor before you spend money on stuff. Just talk to your doctor. That's the better way to approach this. That is. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Crime.
So, crime is a serious issue in Seattle. And, of course, we have yet another story of someone getting shot. Again, happening at a homeless encampment. Police haven't found the suspect yet, but one person is injured. Now, thankfully, there has not been a death. But up until, I believe the stat is as of last week, homeless encampments have accounted for 18% of the shootings that we've seen in the city of Seattle. 18%. And so, of course, we have another encampment-related shooting. And don't worry, they don't just shoot each other. They also stab each other, according to the data. We've covered some of those stories. And so today, to address the rise in gun violence, not just in Seattle, but in King County as a whole, because both King County and Seattle data shows a surge, Mayor Jenny Durkin and King County Executive Dow Constantine and some community leaders, they're putting a ton of money into a pilot program to address gun violence. And by a ton of money, I mean a minuscule amount that's not going to get anything done because they're not truly serious about going after gun violence. $2 million. It'll be used to invest to hire additional staff for the King County Regional Peacekeepers Collective program. They're going to create a quote-unquote support system for young people at risk of gun violence, so says Como TV. It's supposed to help about 200 people, young people, and their families over the course of the next 2 years. How does it help? By addressing the root causes of gun violence. Is it enough? $2 million? I mean, to get to the root causes of gun violence? $2 million? Probably not. And how are you getting to the root causes of gun violence? Oh, they're also giving $10 million to 33 community organizations focused on the safety of BIPOC communities. An acronym that doesn't actually truly mean, it's just made up. Black, Indigenous, People of Color. So you're going to give money to organizations focused on on demographics that are equally hurt as anybody else if shot with a bullet. So we're going to help people on the basis of skin color. And we're going to give it to community organizations that are inherently ideological, such as Community Justice. Who's involved in Community Justice? Nikita Oliver. Nikita Oliver is a fringe activist far to the left. She's an abolitionist, and we are giving her money. And we're giving like-minded organizations money, similar to Community Justice, restorative justice programs. Hey, I know you just got involved in a drive-by shooting. We're going to give you art therapy, music therapy. I think that'll help get you on the right path. Why are you pointing a gun at me right now? You're supposed to be picking up that paint and that brush. No, stop. That's going to... Okay, yeah, we're good. I've never had more confidence before in my life that Seattle and King County as a whole will get gun violence under control. Never, ever, ever. Good for them. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text message. 1-800-465-8770. Send me your text. You're listening to the Jason Rancho. Every Thursday, I post a Jason Rancho video update where I take a deep dive into an important topic. Today's topic will be all about testing and the COVID test grift. It's available on all of our social media platforms, from Facebook and Twitter to Instagram and LinkedIn. Yeah, I think I posted on LinkedIn today. It's brought to you by our friends over at the Novak team, powered by Keller Williams. Visit them online at meetthenovaks.com. I hope you'll check out the video and take a deeper dive into the scam that we're all about to get hit with. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending at home?
37 of the state's 39 sheriffs signed and released a letter pledging to abide by their oath of office and protect your constitutional rights. Now, normally, you wouldn't have to do that, right? Normally, there would be an expectation that our law enforcement agencies, the people who run the agencies, will, in fact, abide by their oath of office and protect our constitutional rights, regardless as to whether or not they agree with the underlying constitutional right, like gun rights, right? We would expect that. However, we do live in a state and right now in a country in which folks on the left are increasingly trying to limit some of your rights, especially when it comes to guns. Joe Biden last night indicated he wants to ban handguns. We're going to talk about that in the next hour or in the next segment. But the sheriffs found themselves in a position where they felt the need to speak up because they were hearing from their constituents. They were hearing from the community. They were concerned, folks in the community, that law enforcement is going to start to enact some of the fringe policies of the left. And so in this letter, they specifically say, look, we're going to protect gun rights in particular. Quote, we individually and collectively pledge to do everything within our power to steadfastly protect the Second Amendment and all other individual rights. Brian Burnett is the Chelan County Sheriff. He's going to be on the show at about 5:30. But he spoke to Cairo 7 TV and said, look, we just want everyone to feel comfortable in our communities.
I think the message we want to send is one is we want to minimize their fear. We want to put them at ease. So there could be a time down the road where the sheriffs may have to decide as a chief law enforcement executives of their counties that they would say this is what we are or we aren't going to enforce.
Now, there were only two sheriffs who did not sign on to this letter, the sheriffs of King County and Kitsap County. Now, to be clear, both are in transitional roles. Kitsap didn't even have an official sheriff when this letter was written. Mitzi Johanknik is on her way out because of the vote. So they did not sign on to this letter. Every other sheriff did. Adam Fortney did. Ed Troyer did. And it wasn't motivated by any single piece of legislation. If you'll recall, thankfully, most of the attacks on guns legislatively in Olympia didn't go anywhere. The one that did pass was the ban on open carry at protests. Bring your Molotov cocktails, thumbs up. Rocks, candles in glass and casing, go for it. Actually enjoying your Second Amendment rights to open carry, nope, can't do it. It's intimidating. The people in Black Bloc attacking everyone, not intimidating, go for it. We're going to sit on the sidelines. But when it comes to open carry, I guess it's too much. And so in this letter, they say, as your elected sheriffs, we individually and collectively pledge to do everything within our power to steadfastly protect the Second Amendment. We understand the destructive influences currently existing in our country. And we'll only relent when women and men everywhere genuinely care for each other. Well, then they're never going to relent because there are too many bad faith people out there. There is a reasonable response from some folks to this letter. There is. And it's one I generally share, at least the concern. On this, on gun rights, I trust that these sheriffs, overwhelmingly Republican or conservative, agree with me on the constitutionality of our right to bear arms. But what if they were sheriffs who disagreed with my view? As you know, there are some people who don't think even the right to bear arms exists. Keith Olbermann, for example. So what would happen if they held a different view than right now, thanks to the Supreme Court, the prevailing view on the Second Amendment? Jeffrey Needle is a constitutional lawyer He spoke to Cairo 7 TV. He made an interesting point and a stupid point. We'll see if you can figure out which is which.
It's dangerous because it shows an extreme bias by the sheriffs of Washington State.
A bias towards constitutional rights to bear arms? That's the bias? I mean, we expect elected positions to hold some kind of bias, and if the bias is against what the community supports, if it's in conflict with what we all support, we vote that person out of office, or you can recall. The bar certainly is high in Washington State, but you can vote that person out of office. So they say, oh, there's a bias. Well, okay, I mean, yes, there is a bias. That's true. Every single person has biases on gun rights, on constitutional rights in general, to favorite music and food. So they've got bias. Yeah, no, I got that. You also have bias, Jeffrey, with all due respect.
In favor of Second Amendment rights. They don't have some sort of unilateral power to determine which legislation is constitutional, which is not, and enforce only those that they believe is constitutional.
I think that that is a very valid point. I think it is a fair point. Now, my takeaway from the letter is slightly different in that I don't think if a law were to pass that they simply disagree with, they would go ahead and just ignore it. Because there are plenty of laws that these sheriffs disagree with, including the weekend laws that will officially go into effect that cover the way policing can exist now in Washington State. But they're going to abide by it. I think the intent of this letter was more to ensure the community that they are not going to allow people to obviously act out of control. So as Joe Biden says he's going to ban handguns or wants to ban handguns, if Jay Inslee comes out and says, we are now just unilaterally banning handguns, I've got an executive order. They're saying they won't do that. And Jeffrey Needle is certainly correct in that sheriffs don't have the authority to determine whether or not a law is constitutional or not, but they do have a duty to the community, to the Constitution, to not abuse their power. And if they were ever ordered to abuse their power in ways that I think most reasonable people would say is an abuse of power, my expectation is that, yes, they will, in fact, say no to the enforcement. But we'll see. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to join the conversation and send me a text message. Welcome back to the Jason Rantz Show. Look at that. It is Thursday. You remember what we do on Thursdays now. Every single Thursday, I do a Jason Rantz Show video edition where I dive into a particular topic that I think is of importance to all of us, or at least it should be. And I post a video on all of our platforms, be it Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. And I do it because of the support, the sponsorship of the Novak team, powered by Keller Williams. You can visit them at meetthenovaks.com. And in this particular edition of the Jason Rantz Show, I covered what we talked about yesterday and a little bit earlier today, the push for testing. And we take a deeper dive into why that's happening. Who's behind it, intentionally or not, will make a lot of money off of it. So I hope you will check it out. You can text the keyword RANTZ, R-A-N-T-Z, to 1-800-465-8770. And I'll go ahead and send you a direct link to all of my social media channels. And you can feel free to check out the video. We're on episode number 6. So I certainly hope that you will give it a view. Last night, CNN hoped you would give their really terrible, and I mean really, really terrible town hall a view. Town hall with Joe Biden, who managed to make so many errors in such a short period of time. And some of them were errors in, he got a little bit too truthful. Some of them were just, he was false. He said things that were untrue. And I thought we would go through a few of them. And let's start on the issue of gun control. or in this case, gun banning. President Biden got, I think, a little too honest. Was this a stumble or was this a Freudian slip? Was this him saying what he meant to say or what he truly believes?
The idea you need a weapon that can have the ability to fire 20, 30, 40, 50, 120 shots from that weapon, whether it's a 9mm pistol or whether it's a rifle, is ridiculous.
So just real quickly, I'll let him finish. We're used to having the conversation about banning AR-15s. But now he's talking about banning pistols. I guarantee you, if you had a deep dive conversation with him about the kinds of pistols he's talking about here, he would be completely lost. He would be completely lost. He has no idea about magazine capacity. He has no idea about how to have honest conversations about magazines in the first place. This idea that a pistol, a Glock, is some kind of assault weapon is, of course, ludicrous. This idea that Glock owners have rounds that carry 120, like, no. When talking about the AR-15, the conversation has been incredibly dishonest and disingenuous. We don't have a problem of gang violence and shootings with AR-15s, right? And yet they continue to do the AR-15 boogeyman argument. But now they've graduated to pistols. Now they've graduated to pistols. And they talk about AR-15s the way that they want to ban them. So why would we not expect that the undertones here are to ban handguns as well?
I'm continuing to push to eliminate the sale of those things, but I'm not likely to get that done in their terms. Here's what I've done.
Okay, what have you done?
The people who, in fact, are using those weapons are acquiring them illegally.
Well, so, yes, I suppose there's obviously truth to that, right? They're not going into a gun shop, even though he wants you to pretend that they are. He's not printing them on a 3D printer, as he wants you to believe. They are breaking into homes, and they're stealing guns. They are stealing guns from other bad guys. So if they were to steal a car and use cars to run into crowds, drive into crowds, would we ban the cars? No, of course not. We would go after the people who are using the cars in an inappropriate and illegal way. So why are we having a conversation about banning weapons? I know he's going to pivot into, here's what I'm going to do. But he said he wants to ban them. That's his goal. Is that a logical goal given the circumstances in that an individual is doing something with something that's otherwise legal to purchase and use, but he's doing it in an illegal way or she's doing it in an illegal way? No conversation about going after the criminals. Not yet, but let's hear some of the spin.
Illegally.
No, I heard.
And so what happens is I've got an ATF, alcohol, tobacco, and firearms.
I know what ATF is.
I have them increase their budget and increase their capacity, along with the Justice Department, to go after the gun shops that are not abiding by the law of doing background checks.
What are the gun shops that are not abiding by the law? How many do they exist? And how many are you able to tie directly to the gun violence? And what do you need a bigger budget for the ATF for? What do you need that bigger budget for? You don't need to have the ATF expand its scope or budget to go after all of these criminal outlets pretending to be honest brokers of guns. Why aren't you going after them right now? Where do they exist? We have gun violence here in Seattle, in Tacoma, in Federal Way. Which gun shops are you talking about? He's not being honest about it. So on the one hand, he wants to go ahead and ban handguns. And on the other hand, he's pretending that gang members and other criminals are just going into a gun shop and purchasing weapons illegally, not even going through the background check. Oh, okay. But also you say we need to expand universal background checks. But you're also saying in the same breath that they're not being used anyway. So what are we doing here? Uh-huh. Then the filibuster came up with Don Lemon pressing the president.
If you agree with the former president, he is called your as you call him, your old boss, that it is a relic of Jim Crow.
It is.
If it's a relic of Jim Crow, it's been used to fight against civil rights legislation historically. Why protect it?
If it's a relic of Jim Crow, why did you not say that while you had power, while you were using it? Democrats are using this silly language right now. But they use the filibuster. The same people, some of the same people who are condemning the filibuster, the relic of Jim Crow, they used it. They abused it. They see themselves in a position of power, barely, in the Senate. And they want to abuse that power to pass a whole bunch of things because they know in the midterms that they're not going to be able to do it. So they come out and start using this silly language. Now, the answer Biden gives as to why he shouldn't pursue it is actually the right one, in a way.
There's no reason to protect it other than you're going to throw the entire Congress into chaos and nothing will get done.
That part's true.
Nothing at all will get done. And there's a lot at stake. The most important one is the right to vote. That's the single most important one. And your vote counted, and counted by someone who honestly counts it.
Even if you're in this country legally.
For example, wouldn't my friends on the other side love to have a debate about the filibuster instead of passing the Recovery Act? Or wouldn't they love doing it instead of being in a position where we provide for... How many of you have children under the age of 17? Raise your hand.
Not
Guess what? You're getting a lot of money in a monthly check now, aren't you?
No, not really, especially given the context of cost of goods going up higher now because of inflation, because of out-of-control spending that you are overseeing. It's a nice pivot, though. He can't even defend the idea that the filibuster is a relic of Jim Crow. And, of course, Don Lemon doesn't point out the fact that Democrats use this all the time. And they would use it right now if they were in a position that the Republicans are in. So there were a lot of lowlights from the town hall. It's just pretty embarrassing. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to join the conversation and send me a text message. 1-800-465-8770. Don't forget the weekly Jason Rancho video is brought to you by the Novak team, powered by Keller Williams. Visit them online at meetthenovaks.com. We have got that video up right now at all my social media channels. So make sure you go ahead and check it out. And big shout out to meetthenovaks.com and the Novak team for being a wonderful sponsor. Welcome back to the Jason Rant Show on KTTH. Thank you so much for tuning in today. I really do appreciate it. Don't forget, I'll be on Fox News Primetime later today. I was on America's Newsroom earlier this morning, and tomorrow it looks like I'll be on Tucker Carlson tonight. So make sure you subscribe to the YouTube channel, youtube.com/JasonRants, youtube.com/JasonRants. I post all of the videos that we do there, and oftentimes I'll give you behind-the-scenes look via my Instagram account, just again, instagram.com/JasonRants, or just fire up the app. Search for Jason Rantz. This next story, I gave a preview on the Todd Herman show earlier this morning where, and I know it's crazy, you're going to think I'm making this up, in Vancouver, British Columbia, a city council member handed out free heroin, cocaine, and meth that she said was purchased from the dark web. And it's not just an issue that should be concerning to the folks in Vancouver, it's an issue that should be concerning to you. Because I'm willing to bet that this ends up happening here in Seattle, and then it will spread. Now, the council member, they're called counselors. Her name is Jean Swanson. And I spoke to her over the weekend. And she admits that she distributed all those drugs to different groups within the area that would then be given to addicts. Now, she calls this an act of civil disobedience. Obviously, it is illegal, even in Vancouver, to hand out the drugs. But she says she was doing it to bring attention to the city's growing overdose crisis, fatal overdose crisis. But the first question I had was this truly necessary? Because did you know that the entire province of British Columbia, they're already slated to begin offering a quote-unquote safe drug supply to the addicts? They embraced a drug-permissive policy of heroin injection sites. And much like here in Washington and in Oregon, they pretty much don't charge any crimes surrounding drug use. And as a consequence of that, British Columbia was hit really, really hard with overdose deaths. what started as a pilot program for the quote-unquote safe space to shoot up heroin, it was normalized in Vancouver. It was legitimized. But of course, it hasn't fulfilled the promise that it made. Proponents of the heroin injection sites, they told us over and over and over again, we're going to get to fewer overdose deaths and more people treated of their addiction. None of that is true. None of that happened. There's been a surge in overdose emergencies and deaths before COVID started. Between 2015 and 2019, according to the data, there was four times higher, quote, paramedic attended overdose events, meaning someone had to call 911 because someone was overdosing in a home, on a street, in an alleyway. Just this year, from January to May, Vancouver saw a record high 851 overdose deaths. The crisis prompted this counselor, Jean Swanson, to hand out what she was calling safe drugs. She did it in front of a police building. The heroin, the meth, the cocaine that she passed out, which she claims was purchased on the dark web, was screened for fentanyl and other substances that you often find laced in the drugs you would buy on the streets. You see, instead of treating the addiction, they're saying people are buying fentanyl-laced and other laced drugs on the streets, not realizing it, and as a result, they are overdosing. So let's get in the way of that by making sure that the drugs they are taking won't have any of that stuff laced inside of it. So they did the screening, and then they pass it out. She connected with two organizations. One is called DULF, Drug User Liberation Front, and the Vancouver Area Network of Drug Users, VANDU. And she told me over the phone over the weekend that those groups are, quote, working to get a safe supply of drugs so that the drugs that people use aren't poisoning them, so they don't die from them. The drug itself is poison. Did you know that, counselor? Did you know that the heroin and the meth, all that stuff, that is the poison. The second you put it into your system, you are poisoning your body. Is it made less safe when it is filled with fentanyl that you don't realize? Yeah, it is. Does it mean it's safe? No, it doesn't. Does it mean it's a safe supply? No. Did you know that you could still overdose on cocaine if it was purchased by the state government or the provincial government? This wasn't the first time they pulled the stunt. They've done it before. They've handed out drugs to people, to addicts. But she told me, this counselor, this time they asked me if I would go and do it with them because they want to create pressure to have a safe supply. Vancouver has a long history of doing things like this. Yeah, I bet. You also now have a long history of helping kill people, kill addicts, rather than help them. Now, she knows what she did was illegal. She doesn't care. She doesn't plan on facing any legal consequences. She says that there have been calls for her arrest, but there hasn't been, quote, any indication that things are going to happen. So let's talk about what will happen. More consequential drug distribution. That's what's going to happen. You see, Swanson and so many others in Vancouver, they support a government supplying these drugs to ensure they're not tainted with any of the, quote, unquote, poison. And in my conversation with her, at no point did she recognize that the drugs itself are poison, nor did she even mention treatment. Not at all. It didn't come up. She just kept on talking about the drugs that are being sold on the streets and how they could be safer if only she was in charge. She said, you don't have a clue what you're buying, basically, if you're buying it on the street. There's also a lot of health researchers who are working with the drug user groups who are saying we desperately need to have a safe supply of drugs. Not a safe supply of resources to get into treatment. None of that. That doesn't count. And so it looks like she's going to get her way because British Columbia, as of right now, is going to be the first Canadian province to give access to this quote unquote safe drug supply. They've already committed to $22 million to this program. $22 million. According to the Vancouver Sun, they say the province will first offer opioid replacement options, including fentanyl patches and tablets. And eventually, they'll offer stimulants or prescribed heroin. If you think this move was met with controversy, if you thought that maybe, just maybe, folks in Vancouver would think this goes too far? Well, you'd be right in the sense that there was some controversy around this. The controversy, however, is that the people who like this approach think the government isn't acting fast enough. Huh. Let's be clear. There is no such thing as safe heroin. None. Especially when you're an addict. Doesn't matter whether or not fentanyl or something else is laced in it. You can still overdose. And there is almost no discussion taking place on treating the addict. Instead, the focus is on keeping them high. We don't want to judge them. We don't want to criminalize their behavior. It's an addiction. No, but you'll enable it. All of this can very easily become a reality in Seattle. They tried to bring heroin injection sites in this region and in other cities like Philadelphia because of what happened in Vancouver. Right now, they hand out needles by the boxes, including to children, if they were to ask, here in King County. Just in the last few months, the state decriminalized drugs. Cities like Seattle, drug enforcement is incredibly rare. I think it would be an error in judgment to think what happens in Vancouver isn't going to happen here in Seattle, a city run by ideologues looking to be the wokest in the country. We know they're trying to adopt heroin injection sites here. The law, thankfully, so far has stopped them. How long do you think that's going to last? How long do you think that they're going to stop? They're just going to give up? They're not. Why would they? They almost always end up getting their way. Any single time someone wants to judge someone's addiction, you get hit with over the head with this idea, you're criminalizing addiction, you're not showing compassion. Their compassion is killing people. We should judge addicts. We should judge them in so much as we acknowledge what they can't. Their addiction is going to kill them. They desperately need intervention. Sometimes that means they go to jail. As much as I personally would rather get every single addict treatment, the reality is a whole bunch of folks, most of them, simply refuse it because there are no consequences when they refuse it. So at that point, the moral responsibility is not to give them safe supplies of drugs. It's to put them in jail where they belong so they can get off those drugs and get help ultimately. Now, if you want to help me shine a spotlight on this story, please text the keyword RANTZ, R-A-N-T-Z, to 1-800-465-8770. Text R-A-N-T-Z to 1-800-465-8770. I'll go ahead and send you a link to the story, not just so you can read and check out the images there, but also so you can post it on your Facebook wall, Twitter account, wherever it is you are. Make sure you post this story. Let's get some eyes on it. This is serious. You're listening to The Jason Rant Show.